Welcome back, everybody. This is Implicitly Awkward. I am one of your hosts, Alexia.
I'm your other host, Marcus.
And today we have a super special guest. One of my close friends is on, and we're going to be talking about the election. We're going to be talking about theater. We're also going to be talking about religion and politics.
All hard conversations. Our favorite things to talk about, you know what I'm saying? Just some midweek stress for you. You gotta love it. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's get it.
Welcome back to Implicitly Awkward, everybody. Woo woo. We here. November. Yes. We're in it.
Yes.
We're halfway through it. Man, it's already been quite the month. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Shout out to the Scorpios. You know what I'm saying? Like, first off.
Oh, and the Sagittarius and those Sagittarius. On the cusp.
Okay, right. We're on the way. Y'all are on the way. But.
Excuse me.
We're going to have our moment, okay? So shout out to all the Scorpios out there. My birthday.
You have decided that this is your moment, okay?
Yes.
Our moment is coming on Sunday, all right?
And you guess you can have it then. But until then.
Wow.
But yo, all right. You want to play Let Me Put You On?
Yeah, I'm down. Okay. Let's do it.
All right. So Love Renaissance. That label that houses Kitty Cash, Black, Summer Walker, West Side Boogie, Drom. They just put out a Christmas album, and like it's so wholesome. And it's like, can you imagine Drom singing like Christmas carols? Because he's singing it on there. Just like, check that out. It's called Home for the Holidays. So yeah,
I haven't heard something from Drom in like forever.
I know. I was so hyped.
Yeah. That's dope. I will have to check that out because I will say I do like Christmas music. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I do like the holidays. I enjoy a nice Christmas tune or two.
Okay. All right.
No shame in that.
At all, yo. Chestnuts roasting by the open fire.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Jack Frost nipping at
your nose. I mean, come on. It's just so like warm and nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So what you got? What you got for me?
I have a few things, actually. So if we're on the theme of like holidays, Christmas, I watched on Netflix Jingle Jangle. And it was like really cute. It was really pretty, like a whole nice like spectacle. I do recommend it. I think it's for families, you know, so it's that type of thing, but I do recommend it. It was great. My partner fell asleep while watching it, but that's okay. That's all right. And I will say that I started watching The Crown, but I started this season, the fourth season, because I'm like very into the whole Princess Diana thing. I just remember like when we were growing up, when everything happened with her and how she passed and everything like that. So it's really interesting to kind of see this take on it. Obviously, the series is written by an anti-monarchist, but I think it does give a glimpse into what it may have been like for Princess Diana, and potentially for the other two women that married into the family and kind of the things that they may have or still struggling with. So check it out. It's pretty cool. I like it. The first episode's a little long, but then once it starts getting into like the Princess Diana stuff, very good.
True indeed. Rest in peace to the goat. So we got a special guest in the building, right?
Yes, we do. I'm very excited. So this special guest is Portland Thomas. I have known her since the beginning of undergrad at NYU Tisch. So Miss Portland Thomas, welcome to Implicitly Awkward. I'm so happy to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I guess we kind of can talk about, I mean, how we met. I don't remember the first day of us meeting.
Yeah, I don't either. It's probably like welcome week or like the first day of street. Mm-hmm. That was so long ago.
Yeah, it was a really long time ago. So we were both in the experimental theater wing at NYU Tisch as acting majors. The experimental theater wing, if you could give like a couple words to describe what that is.
Sure. Yeah. Experimental theater wing was our like theater training was devoted to like postmodern training and like postmodern theater. It's like a lot of downtown New York theater. The best way to describe it is like a bunch of people rolling around on the floor, just making really avant-garde art. I learned a lot from it, but it was very like out of the box training. Would you agree?
Yeah, very out of the box. yes, that show's theme song, everybody. Yes. It was like rolling on the floor. Like if you think about like New York artsy, super artsy, just kind of weird too. Yeah. That's what it was. But I'll say that the training and a lot of the experiences were really valuable. But at first, it was definitely kind of like a culture shock.
Yeah, a definite culture shock of
yeah,
not only like theater, because like I'd gone into NYU being like, okay, cool, like I'm going to be a movie star. Can't wait to do this. And then it's like, oh, wait, I'm going to do like downtown Brooklyn theater. That's one culture shock. And then the other culture shock of like very like upper middle class white people mm-hmm. being privileged enough to be able to like do non-paying Brooklyn theater for their whole career and mm-hmm. like kind of dismissing people who wanted to make more of a living from theater. So that was also another culture shock, you know?
Yeah, I agree. The whole downtown theater, like postmodern aesthetic is very, they have this thing where it's like a canvas, like being blank mm-hmm. and it's really like whitewashed. Like that was the yeah. type of people that did that type of work. And so, you know, you have very like privileged white individuals that were in ETW, not all of them, but a lot of them. And right, we're all in New York being super artsy, but it did pose some problems. Like, I just remember personally, like we would all sit on the floor with our legs crossed and like be talking about art and such. And like, I just never was, like I was taught to raise my hand and be kind of, you know, the teacher's talking, but yeah, so I kind of got deemed as shy or like, oh, I wasn't like really participating, but it was just more of like a respect thing where other people would just kind of keep talking and talking.
Just hijacking, you know, keep talking. And like I found too that at least some of the teachers would, because it was that world and like there would be people who looked like they fit in that downtown aesthetic, like they would be praised like over... it would mostly be people of color mm-hmm. That would kind of get like the brush under the rug of like the type of work that they were creating versus what, you know, the people who looked like what ETW kind of stood for.
Mm-hmm. I remember there was that piece that one of the teachers created was all about like Icelandic people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, when Icelandic people is all white, so like literally that whole cast was completely white except like a few people.
That's fascinating that they would do a piece on Icelandic people when you're based out of New York. It's like the city that has all types of cultures that you could explore. Y'all chose Icelandic people? Nothing wrong with Iceland, but like, yo, yo, what? Come on.
Yeah, I just found the choices too of like productions would always blow my mind. It'd be like a mostly white production and then like, you know, the tokens, like it would very be mm-hmm. I found myself being a token a lot in mm-hmm. school productions, just like, am I here because of my talent or am I here because like you forgot that you needed to cast someone of color? And like I could be totally wrong, I don't know your motives and your intentions, but mm-hmm. it happened a lot where I was like the only I was the only Black person in our studio, like in our grade. I was the only Black person.
Yeah, you were.
So that was one, so much to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And two, like, we would audition for these shows. Yeah. And I'd be like the only Black person in these shows. And you're taught, like, I feel, especially being so young, that your voice doesn't really matter if you're put in a space where that happens a lot, right? If you're put in a space of a token and people in the majority are praised constantly,
mm-hmm.
you question your own voice. So I feel like there was a lot of that going on too in college.
Yeah, I never really, I don't think we ever got to speak about that and like in terms of like being a token and your experience of that. Because I felt like in my experience, I had like a little bit of an opposite one of kind of being in this like middle ground of we kind of don't know like what you are and not fitting into like one or the other, like, oh, you don't look quite white enough, but you also don't look quite like this enough to like be like, okay, you're going to be this kind of quota in this production. So I always felt kind of like in this weird in between and kind of like, oh, okay, we're just going to gloss over you. And
no, yeah. I totally get that. Yeah, it's just like how they handle students of color is such a, I don't know, it's like a delicate thing that they don't treat very delicately. But then I sort of see that even acting professionally now, it's like, especially for my type, like I'm not like urban, you know, like my voice is a certain way, like how I carry myself is a certain way. So I get pegged. Half the roles I go out for aren't even American roles. They're like West African or Caribbean, because I'm not even sure. It's like this, like I have this heightened quality about myself that it's just stupid. It's like I should be able to go out for Black American roles because I'm a Black American, you know? But it's seems like if simple, you don't fit that stereotype, what's up?
It seems kind of simple, huh? Like,
right? Who'd have thought? But it's like if you don't fit that stereotype idea of what they want, if you're not that box, then they just don't know what to do with you, you know?
Yeah. I had a lot of like issues with acting and that whole like typecasting, stereotyping and being like, okay, I have to like perform this type in order to get roles. And then like, I find my niche, but the niche is also like, I'm stereotyped in a box. So I always had a lot of issues with that. And I think that was also like a big reason kind of for me, like moving away from acting and also like for my social activism as well. Cause that just like was always so frustrating. It was so frustrating.
Yeah. It's so frustrating. It's like, how have we not moved past this? Like, how have we not moved past the idea that people of color are complex and don't fit into stereotypes and archetypes because we're humans. And I just think that it's until writers change and like they keep saying they're changing, but like they're not. There's more happening, but I think it's going to take a long time for people to write nuance. First of all, I feel like a lot of writers even now, just the nuance of characters is sort of missing. And I feel like a lot of, some productions are, it's very apparent, but a lot of productions are just like one-dimensional characters. I think until we kind of move past that and create more developed characters in general, and then creating more developed characters of color as like a base, then I don't know, then I'm gonna have to go back. I'm trying to like put my thought together.
Yeah.
Crazy to think that white supremacy can like even permeate like entertainment to that depth. Yeah. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
100%. That's how it thrives. I feel like media, I was reading an article and it was like media is actually propaganda. Like
absolutely.
So like it's meant to make you think a certain way. It's meant to make you believe that the world works a certain way. And it's so influential. Like if you think about what you watch and how it affects how you see the world and how you see yourself, like, oh, I don't look like that person on TV, or like this is how I need to interact with other people. Or like, that's why advertising works so well, is because we're so impressionable, as much as we want to think we're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a crazy good segue into today's topic, the media. Yeah. Because, yo, y'all, we made it. We survived the election. Okay, we survived the election. It's over. Okay. The election has ended. Despite what some people may argue, the election has ended. Okay. 45 is out of here. He doesn't realize it yet, but that's fine. He's going to blame the media and all these other things. I feel, what's the word? Relieved. But also just like, I feel like I want to keep rubbing it in people's faces. Like, because I feel like the last 4 years, even before then, but like especially like the last 4 years have been just so traumatic, and all the dumb things that have happened that were all avoidable. And it's like, we got this person out of here. He's gone. He's fighting and clawing at this point. But like at this point, we need to like send the moving truck. Like you're in the people's house. Get out. Okay.
I'm ready. I've been waiting to exhale, and now I can exhale. I can breathe a little lighter because this man is out of office.
Yeah. I feel like there's a part of me that feels like he knows he lost, but he's just creating this whole like show and diversion and distrust just for his own benefit and like for possibility in terms of running again or whatever other businesses that he may venture. So honestly, I just think he's an egomaniac and like a narcissist and just creating all of this for his own gain and not for the American people and for this country. It's just like, it's a shit show. We're done. Please stop.
It's just really sad to see him like still tweeting weeks after the election.
Twitter like, fingers.
Let it go.
Dog. Take the L, okay?
You are a grown man. Think of your children. Like,
what? Well, his children are his hype men and hype women.
Oh, wait.
They're like in it too. They are in the delusion, ready to go.
And speaking of like the election and all of this talk of like fake ballots, where are these ballots coming from? It's like, yo, you spent all year telling your people not to vote by mail. So then your people didn't vote by mail. But then Biden-Harris was saying everybody vote by mail because it's a little bit more safe. So then their people voted by mail. So then when it comes down to it, why would you complain that you don't know where all these votes are coming from? They're coming from the mail. Why is that so hard to explain? Like, it's the votes came from the mail. You had to mail, people had to mail it in. It takes time, and that's where all these votes came from. And like, it's historic because, like, yo, flip Georgia. That's crazy. Shout out to everybody who worked on that. Shout out to Stacey Abrams and her team. Incredible stuff, right? That's like historic. I never thought I was going to see that happen.
Pennsylvania flipped too.
See, but okay, yes, you were working in Philadelphia, right?
I was working in Philadelphia. I was counting ballots. I literally, it was crazy to see how the media kind of ramped up what was happening and being in the middle of it, like as it was happening. Like I had no idea that it was going to come down to Philadelphia where I was working polls to be like, what county is going to flip Pennsylvania? And it ended up being Philadelphia. So that was a crazy experience. Yeah.
So what was that process like?
So I didn't realize how much actually went into the election. Mm-hmm. There's so like all the mail-in ballots, we have to like organize them by district or like neighborhood. And then after we organize those, we have to organize them alphabetically. So like, I felt like so much of it was organizing. It took way longer than counting the ballots. Mm-hmm. Once everything was organized, we would like filter things out too. So if a signature didn't match, or if the address wasn't written correctly, or if they just left out any tiny little detail, we would like reject the ballot. And like, who knows, they might've counted them later, but on my level, like I could only see what ballots were good to go and be counted and which ballots were rejected because of like a minor mistake on the voter's part. So there'd be like huge crates full of rejected ballots just sitting in a warehouse. And I was like, whoa, this is like, I don't know if this is voter suppression or not. Like, I don't really know the whole process of it, but that was like, wow, there's so much that actually goes into which ballots are actually being counted.
Mm-hmm.
So then once we like organized all of those, we would open them and then flatten them. And then there'd be these poll watchers that'd be like 20 feet away, just making sure that no one committed fraud. So Republican poll watchers were there and Democratic poll watchers were there. And then one day, I want to say 2 days after the election,
mm-hmm.
we got stopped. So I guess Trump's administration filed an injunction, which has been all over the news, to get us to stop counting ballots so that his poll watchers could get 6 feet away instead of 20 feet away. And then they would only allow like 10 people. So no. Originally 10 people would be in each section, like opening ballots or flattening ballots or counting ballots. And then they made only like 3 people per section so that the poll watchers could like really see what was going on. And I was like, all of these ballots are Biden. Like, I don't know if you want like a front row seat to you losing this election, because that's what your lawyers have gotten you. but yeah, it was a super involved process, but being a part of that process really made me see that there was no way that there was voter fraud. Like mm-hmm. the process is like, this is democracy. Like, they've set up laws and set up rules to make sure that voter fraud doesn't happen, especially mail-in voter fraud.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there is a very specific process, and like what you're saying, there's a lot that goes into that process, and all of these steps are in order to make sure that the election, that the votes are credible. Because I had no idea in terms of, you know, just what goes into, even before you count the ballots, of flattening it out and all these things. And I guess I'm interested, what was your experience? Like, were you in Philadelphia?
I was in Philadelphia, yeah. So we worked at the convention center. It's like a huge building, like right in the center of Philly. Yeah.
Like, when you were kind of walking the streets, could you feel the tensions? Could you see like what everybody was seeing in the news of like one side is Biden, one side is Trump?
Oh yeah, 100%. So I feel like the first day it was normal, like, because I feel like everyone voted, everyone just wanted to see what was going on. But I think the longer it took, like the longer it took for the results to come in, that's when we started seeing more and more protests. And then once all the news started coming out about Trump trying to file injunctions and suing states, mm-hmm. that's when it got really large. Like, that's when all the protests happened. But it was hilarious. One of the days I walked outside, I was like on my lunch break, and as I'm coming back into the building, there's all these cops everywhere. On one side of the street is Trump supporters, like a whole group of Trump supporters. On the other side is like Black Lives Matter, Democrats, just like everybody else. But then like a DJ came. So it was like very, like, it was like positive vibes. Like, it was like a dance party, but everyone was still protesting against each other. I was like, this is
so interesting.
I know. Like, I don't know if it was the weather. I don't know. Everyone was like still in good spirits. It was like, I don't know if you guys have ever had like sports night and like at your high school or something, or where it's just like you're competing against each other, but like everyone's there to have fun. Like, that's what it felt like. I'm like, this is.
Wow. Wow, that I like. The DJ just shows up like, okay, y'all, we're ready.
Yeah. He was playing some bops like from the 70s. Everyone was like, yes.
That's amazing.
It's great.
I want to run back to something you said earlier though. Like, before it was like 10 people per section counting, and then after the injunction via the court case, it was 3 people counting.
Yeah.
So you mean to tell me that court case slowed down getting the results in Philadelphia? So basically you're saying that had that not happened, we would have had a result maybe days before?
Probably, yeah. At least a day before, I want to say.
Just want to clarify. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Marcus is upset.
Isn't that wild?
I'm still mad about it. Yo, so it was Saturday, right? It was Saturday the 7th that the decision mm-hmm. finally came out. And I had scheduled a massage for that day, and it's
yes,
like,
you did.
And you know, because you know, celebrating my
self-care.
Birthday, turn up,
OMB
right?
day.
And I, you know what, I am, you know, I'm risking it all. I'm definitely risking it all, while to go get a massage during a pandemic this way. But I did it, you know, COVID free.
Oh, I definitely got a massage during this pandemic. You are not
okay. Yeah, like COVID free. I got my results back today. Turn up. But like, yo, even during the massage, yo, like, I'm just ranting about politics to the guy. And it's like, he was like tapped into all of this, so like he engaged with me, but it's like, yo, after a while, I'm just like, man, just shut up and enjoy this. Like,
yeah.
Stop.
Enjoy your
over. Stop. Like, just relax. I'm still so pissed. So yeah.
I can see it. Yeah, you are. I mean, not, don't get me wrong, like that, what was it that night? Oh, so awful. And I kept just being like, okay, we just gotta wait till the morning, like it's gonna be okay. I remember I woke up like, and I looked at my phone. I was like, oh, okay, good. Okay, we're good. And then, right, we were just like in this stalemate.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept refreshing ABC News. Like, when is this going to be over? So I, trust me, I feel the pain. But at the same time, you know, I was just like, I got to let this go. I got to let it go. But I can get like, right, yay. Hopefully, like,
right,
the soul of the nation is back. Like, that's such an interesting tagline to use.
It is.
Yeah. Right. We're like, yay, we won. And like, we get to be like, haha, you have to accept it now. Cause, right, we didn't win the other time and we were in despair. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know. I'm not trying to rub it in. I'm just like, yeah, these are the facts. This is what it is. Now you need to move on. Let's go.
I don't even have time to like be rubbing it in some random person's face. I'm like, we have regular racism back now.
We're
back to ground zero. Like before we were like down, we were in the negative. And now we're still at zero though. Like we still have work to do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like at least we have people who may be trying. We'll see. We still gotta like hold these people accountable. Be like, hey, you remember when you said you were gonna cancel student debt? Like, we gotta remember that you said that, Biden. You know,
that would be nice. That would be really
helpful. All of us here remember.
I got a lot of those. I got a lot of student debts. Okay, I got a lot of that. That would be
same. It's a party.
Right.
But you know, we can't underplay Kamala Harris becoming the first Black woman, first woman.
Yes.
Right?
Big deal.
Like that's amazing. I mean, I was crying. Like, it was just so profound. Yeah. So profound.
So profound. Crazy. And as someone who, like, I've always stretched between acting and politics, like politics is my plan B. Like, I feel like if acting doesn't work out, I'd be a lawyer or something. So like to see like not only a woman, but like a Black woman be able to successfully navigate these spaces. And there are so many other Black women that have been elected in this election too. Like for the first time, like being governors of states and mayors and, you know, like this is monumental, but like Kamala Harris being the first female vice president is like, this is something that my kids can look up to, that I can look up to.
Yeah.
It's just big.
I'm hyped for all the kids in DC because she went to Howard, you know? And like, I don't know, like, especially like doing, being in education in DC, like, I know, not all the kids I had in the schools, like they end up going to Howard, but like Howard's in the middle of the city. So it's like, and again, shout out to everybody who's graduated from Howard. You know what I'm saying? They have quite the air about them already. And you know what? I feel like the nose is going to go even higher in the air because of it. But, like, they deserve it because the vice president is a Howard grad. So, you know what I'm saying? Talk as much shit as you'd like to. But, like, I don't know. It's really dope to me. I'm really hyped.
That's so significant, being from an HBCU, right? Like, then being VP as well. Hey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would feel hype.
And it's great because there's always studies about HBCUs being like historically underfunded than PWIs. So it's like, and we have an alum in the office who has the power to influence that legislation, you know what I mean? Like, she might have the power to influence where that money is getting funded, which is great for HBCUs.
And she's also an AKA. My mom's an AKA, so it's like, again,
my mom's a Delta, so.
Hey, my aunt's a Delta. It makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
It's all good.
All good. It's all good.
It's crazy because, like, these aren't things that, like, I would ever think about when I think about, like, the president or, the VP. like being in like Black Greek life, that's never really been like a thing, you know? So it's crazy. Like it's yeah. I feel like I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around it because they haven't really like started their terms yet.
That's the crazy thing too. It's like they haven't even started and everyone is still, they're like, they're our president. Like we're not even gonna, but I didn't realize too, like how early everything starts. Like I thought it was like, you wait till January 20th and that's when, but it's like Biden's already getting briefed. Like, well,
not really.
That's the issue at the point, at this point, right? Because like, there's still like a pandemic going on and they like the current administration won't recognize the people who are coming in. And it's like, if you continue with this divisiveness, like if you continue to like act this way, it's only going to make it harder for the people who are coming in. And they already have a monumental task of running the nation. But also there's a pandemic happening and people are dying and people are still very, very sick. And it's like,
it's life and death. Like doing that, like playing politics like that, you're literally killing people. It's pretty self-serving and sad. I mean, Biden is like getting consultations with like different agencies and organizations to kind of get his teams ready and everything like that, but it's such a disservice to him and to the American people for him to not start getting the briefs of like Secret Service, everything that's happening with coronavirus, right? Everything that's happening abroad.
It's such a lack of leadership from this current administration. Like, grow up. Like, there are people's lives being put at risk on a daily basis. Like, this is your job. This is your literal, this is the only job that you have, is to ensure the well-being of your people. And you're failing, and you've been failing for 4 years.
It's wild because like the current president be on Twitter just tweeting like nonsense the same way that I do. Yo, come on, man, like you're supposed to be better than me.
Sad that like this is the person that people look up to too, like this. Like, what was that, there was some SNL, was it SNL or the Daily Show, and they were like interviewing Trump supporters and he was like talking to one kid and he was like, have you heard what Trump is saying? Like, he's saying super misogynistic things, super racist things. And the kid's like, yeah, and he's great. He's like, well, do you talk like that? He's like, no, I don't. And he's like, well, does your dad talk like that? Do your cousins talk like that? So then why would you look up to someone who talks like that if no one in your life would ever dare to say those things? Like,
yeah. And then, all right, one more thing. All right, I'm still pissed about this.
You are.
2016, 53% of white women voted for Trump. And in 2020, it was 53. And now in 2020, it's 56% of white women voted for Trump. And it's like, hey, man, this is the same guy got more support. Why is it that people have to hold on to whiteness so badly? Like, why do you have to hold on to whiteness so badly that you would willingly, like, vote for this absolute buffoon? Yo, this man is a moron. This man is a misogynistic adult baby. And it's like, how do you get more votes this time? Like, what's going on? Like that, like, yo, that whole women's march, all them pink hats, and y'all gonna act like this is crazy.
And it's also like, there's two different Americas, right? There's New York and LA. And then there's everything in between. Like, that's just facts, right? So it's like all the stuff that we believe in on the East Coast and the West Coast, super progressive. But then there's like the middle, the whole middle of just like Karens and just, sorry, is that offensive?
No.
Like, there's just people on their farms shopping at Costco. And it's just like a different world. And like,
hey.
Right?
Wholesale prices are not a bad thing, okay?
They're not. But like, that's like the culture of middle America. And they like the number one show in America is freaking The Big Bang Theory, the most offensive, like, racist.
I never watched The Big Bang Theory, nor do I ever have a desire to watch.
Exactly. None of us. But there's like millions of people in this country that watch the show. So it's like, these are the people that are voting for Trump. And like, we have to realize that, like, there are a lot of people that live in between New York and LA, and they're not exposed to cities. They're not exposed to people of color. Like, they literally live in Iowa with like millions of other white people.
And then shout out to Florida.
Florida.
We know how that went.
Yeah. I go, yeah. Yeah. I feel like in the Latino community, I do not want to be the mouthpiece for all of Latinos here, but I think there needs to be some attention paid and organizing paid in terms of like the differences between all of us and understanding whiteness within the Latinx community. And I think there's a lot of like also internalized oppression too, to be honest, and we can go into the socialism thing. I will say that Latino voters, like for Nevada and Arizona for sure, but we have to look at like the specifics of like a person's identity. And I think that next time around, that I think the Latino vote, I think we'll have more attention paid, but we have to get specific, and we also have to do work within our community as well. So I will say that about the Latino vote and Latinos in this election.
Yo, fair. Yo, but my bad, you're about to say something. Go ahead.
Oh no, real quick. I'd always heard the narrative, at least in Miami, because there's such a large Cuban population there. I always heard that the Cuban community voted Republican because they still weren't over JFK and Fidel Castro and like turning that country into a communist country. I don't know. I don't know how much that holds today, but I've always heard that that's like a really big component, at least in Miami.
Honestly, if I boil it down, like I'm not Cuban, I'm Central American. So like my issues or my ancestors' issues are much different. Mm-hmm. But when I boil it down, I really think it's like this concept of whiteness. Mm-hmm. And like wanting to be accepted by the major group and wanting to like better oneself, which is associated with whiteness. So that's how I always boil it down in terms of thinking about that. I'm not quite sure about the specifics in terms of socialism and Cuba's history and how that affects their vote, but at the end of the day, I feel like it does boil down to what I'm saying in some type of capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can totally see that.
It's real, real, real messy. Real messy. Okay, so you brought up Arizona earlier. What was Sharpiegate?
Oh, so I had seen this too on my Facebook. This girl, I think she's a Trump supporter. We went to like a camp for the arts like way back when, and I just saw her posting this thing of like, my ballot wasn't counted, it was in Sharpie, I will not be silenced. And I'm like, girl, really? You voted for Trump? Like, he is trying to silence you. I don't understand. But so she posted this whole thing, and then I did research into it, and it was this whole like conspiracy about how ballots were not counted because people were given Sharpies on purpose. And if your ballot was in Sharpie, it would not be counted in the machine. But that is incorrect. That is false information. As yeah. We also heard from Portland, there's so many different ways as to why a ballot is not counted. But even from like the machines, like corporation that made it, it is suggested to use Sharpie because it will be counted. It is designed to do that. So yeah, but there was a whole thing about it, and I saw it on Facebook first from this girl, and I was like, wait, what? And
at some point, yeah, we have to have a conversation about Facebook and misinformation.
Yeah,
because that's the same.
That's a lesson for this year. Stay off the internet. Like, there's nothing but lies. Like, just chill. Like, not everything you read is true, y'all.
And like, but again, 2016, misinformation. How did Russia hack our election? Via Facebook. But yeah. Again, I'm just a guy. Don't mind me. It's not a it's not even like a conspiracy theory. Like they took him. They took Facebook to trial over it anyway. So like, I just when are we gonna hold Mark Zuckerberg accountable for like all his? This is madness, bro. Get your stuff together. Yeah. What's going on here? Like,
yeah, Marcus, you took that quiz that we had to take in class where we're trying to figure out which profile was a fake profile.
No.
You didn't do that? Oh, there is this like, I wish I had the name of it, but it was created by a university and it's like a test to see if you can figure out like what is a bot or what would be like created by Russia with these fake accounts. Okay. And let me tell you, it's actually it's extremely difficult. Mm. Extremely difficult. So please be careful on Facebook, y'all, because you might think, or Instagram, because you might think this is really real, but honestly, it's not.
Yeah. It's all smoke and mirrors.
Fascinating. Yeah. That's fascinating. People use bots. All these people who are making bots, I really feel like you could use your powers for good. Right? Like, people will make bots so they can get bags earlier than everybody. They make bots so they can, like, buy up all the PlayStation 5s. You know what I'm saying? You're using bots to hack elections. Why don't you use bots to, no, let me not say that on air, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, use your powers for good. Use it for something less productive and not like, just.
Well, did you guys hear about that guy who tweeted, he meant to tweet from his bot, but like tweeted on his Twitter. And he was like, he's like a straight white man. Like, and he's like, holds like a public elected office. And he's like, as a black gay man, I felt like Obama didn't do anything for me. And everyone was like, you know, you're not on your like troll Twitter account.
Right? That's awful. What?
Terrible PR. Like, so bad. Ridiculous.
What do you gain from this behavior? What do you gain from this behavior, bro? Come on, man. Like,
that's dangerous.
Like, he has been dragged.
Oh my goodness.
Like, you're like a 50-year-old man. Like, dude. Come on.
You know we can see you, right? Like,
we can see you. Yes, we can see you.
You need a time out.
I guess I'm going to shift the conversation because I think this was an important topic we kind of discussed earlier off air. But in terms of like religion and politics, I know this is like a hefty or weighted topic. But I think it's interesting to see Christians who do really support Trump when, at least in my understanding of like, I was baptized Catholic, but it doesn't seem to align with like the values of Jesus at all. So yeah. I'm confused.
I'm pretty confused. And like, you'd always heard about like the evangelicals supporting Trump, and I was like, okay, well, that has nothing to do with like my church and like, you know, my religion. But it's like, no, like there are people out here who really are voting for Trump but still touting love your neighbor as yourself, right? They're still vehemently believing these core Christian values but don't align. I'm like, there's no way that you can vote for a man who has ripped children from their families, who does not denounce white supremacy, refused to denounce white supremacy on live television, didn't do it. He has stripped away environmental protections. He has, what else? He's done so many other things.
Horrible.
There's too many.
He sucks.
He is just a terrible human being. Like, voter intimidation, firing people at will for no reason, just cheating, lying, just a vehement liar. I'm like, this is crazy. And like, people are just steadfast for believing in him. And I find in my experience, because I go to church and like, I'm very faith-based. And I find during this time, there are some churches that are very vocal about politics. And I feel that you should be, like Jesus was political. And then there are churches that aren't. Churches that are like, we are going to stay out of it because we're a church. And like, that's just not, I don't believe that that's the role of a church in society. And I think playing that role actually enables people to believe to think that what they're believing in is okay, right? Like, I'm not going to come after this person's character, even though I think that if you are saying that you're a Christian and are voting for Trump, you do need to do some introspection into your soul, because there's just some misalignment right there. But I think churches that don't take a stand against things that they clearly know is wrong, yep, is enabling people to continue to behave that way, to continue to perpetuate cycles that Black lives don't matter, that yep, immigrant lives don't matter, that family doesn't matter if you're supporting ICE that literally is ripping families apart. Yeah, and I think that there just needs to be more discipline from the church and more reprimand for people who believe these types of things.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, right, if you were to kind of strip away the context of like race, ethnicity, citizenship status, and you just presented to a person like, right, this person is in need for X, Y, Z, a normal human being, or even if I go so far as saying like a religious or Christian human being, would probably be like, oh yeah, like we must do X and help them. But once you start adding all these different contexts, then, right, I feel like true colors show. And I think that that's such a key part of it. It really does show white supremacy and oppression. Yeah. I'm like, wow, because honestly, if these issues didn't have those contexts,
you'd be up in arms.
You wouldn't be on that side. And I think it's just really hilarious to seeing some of these like people outside of these places like doing different prayers and things like that, and I'm like, wow, really,
you're really using, yeah. And it's so funny that you say that. I literally found a scripture. It's from James chapter 2 verse 8. It says, if you really keep the royal law found in scripture, love your neighbor as yourself, you're doing right. But if you show favoritism, like you said, if you start adding in these things and you're like, actually, no, I'm only going to show that empathy to white people, then you sin and are convicted by the law and are lawbreakers. Like, it literally, there's several verses that are like, you cannot show favoritism to people. Mm-hmm. And like, that's what's happening. It's like, y'all were up in arms for a church in Paris burning, and y'all can't see people are literally dying. That is an inanimate object, but you're sending billions of dollars. You're weeping in the streets. Yep. You're going to do anything you can physically because a European church has burned down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Over people being shot in the street in your neighborhood.
It's crazy the amount of things that people will do in the name of the church. Mm-hmm. You know, shout out to the Crusades for all you history buffs out there. You know what I'm saying? And like, even they had a kids crusade where instead of sending like whole soldiers, they sent like a fleet of kids to go conquer land in the name of the Catholic Church, and all the kids died because they were kids. You see what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't understand that either. You know, like,
yeah,
like how, why pick and choose verses and scriptures that fit your agenda instead of reading and using the whole book as it was as intended. And then also we know that the book itself is like, it's flawed because, you know, it's inspired by God but written by men. So it's like, yo, like okay,
wild and out in this Bible. I'm reading it out. Yeah. I'm like, wait, y'all got away with that? Like, y'all were doing this? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just like, it's by flawed people, but there's truth, right? Like, there's within it all, there's truth, and there's like the truth of loving your neighbor as yourself, right? The truth of trying to gather my thoughts. Sorry. I'm like trying to piece everything together. But there's a separation between using the church to further your agenda and the actual truth that's behind your beliefs, right? Like the actual inspired by God aspect that is found in the Bible.
Yeah.
And I think there is, like, I think a lot of people will cherry pick and use it to further their own agenda. And that hurts people, that brings about so much more destruction than actually living by the truth of what's in it.
Yeah. I mean, we have to think about like the historical context of like these religions and how they were brought to the Americas and brought also like into Africa with like colonization as well. Yep. And this isn't to denounce the whole religion or Bible, but it can be used as a tool of control and can be cherry picked for one's own self-serving agenda. Yep. So I think we see that in ways now, today. And I think it is important for what you're saying, Portland, for like the church to be political and to like, when there is a person who is spewing hate, to not be silent and complicit, because you then are passively like saying that that's okay. When yeah. we all know that if right, the teachings or the things that we should learn from the Bible or from like any other religious scripture are true and real, then right, this is evidence and you should stand behind that and be vocal about it.
Yeah. I think that fear plays a lot into it, because I'm just curious about like, because the church needs money to function, right? And mm-hmm. I feel like could be that more conservative people give more money to the church and that churches don't want to like siphon off that pipeline. You know what I mean? I could totally be wrong.
Dangerous game, like yeah. church and money.
Yeah.
So many
money and church and politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the fun stuff. All the like conversation.
Yeah. It's like a
slip. Yeah, I think it's just like there needs to be more accountability. And yeah, people just need to stop caring about other people's feelings. Like, honestly, at the end of the day, like your ego and your feelings, like if you're putting that above your heart, like you need some instruction. Like people need to look at their hearts, and like, that's not an easy thing to do. It's never an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. And like to stop walking on eggshells and protecting white tears and white feelings and tell you about yourself and be like, no, you can, what you are believing in is not okay. And like, you could, I'm sure that you have the best of intentions. And like, I don't know how you're raised and I don't know your background and history and why you believe the things that you believe, but they are hurting other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like not okay in terms of like the respect for like human decency and respect. Yeah. Like that's the moral line. It's like, it's not okay because of like moralness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's not okay because you literally believe that someone's life is worth more than another. Mm-hmm. And when you're like, if you're living up, like living that way, if that's how you see the world, then you need to do, that means that you're not connected to God, right? Because if you're connected to God, you see everyone as you see yourself. You see everyone as equal. You see everyone as being part of God, as being as beautiful and wonderfully made as God made us all to be. So it's like, if you're not seeing that, then there's a clear disconnect. And that's what we could get into a whole thing about American Christianity, because that's a whole nother topic laced with capitalism and racism.
I don't know how to follow that up other than saying double tap. Everything Portland said, yo. Shout out to Portland.
Double tap. No, everything. It, again, these topics, it's like the crux of like our existence, right? In this modern day with all these man-made things that we have constructed. So yeah, it can be a very dangerous game when we start playing with these things for our own benefit, but people do that all mm-hmm. the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. Or the fear of offending people, because I feel like we're in a generation of who loves to be offended by anything. And so when we want to operate in a place that doesn't offend other people, even though what we're saying has the potential to help other people, has the potential to make other people learn, then that's where it gets dangerous too, right? It's like,
yeah. It's difficult, right? Because on the other side, someone who believes what they believe, they could feel the same way of like, well, we're in this like place of, right, not offending people and everybody gets so offended, but this is what I believe too. So it's always like we could use these ways of thinking on both sides. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the root of it is honestly like decency of human respect and regard.
And that's the truth, right? Like yeah. that's that's what I meant by truth. It's like, mm-hmm. there are truths though that on either side, like there's your side, there's my side, and the truth. But what is the truth? And then you base your life off of that truth. So, and I think as we as a society need to go back to like, what are these truths? That every human being is worthy of respect, of love, that we're all equal, that, you know, these like things that seem so cliche, but it's like, guys, but this is like what the baseline should be. And like, mm-hmm. life would be so much easier. Our society would be so much better if we all believed those things.
You would think because what the Declaration of Independence says, we hold the truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. And then they're like, all right, slave, go get my food or I'm going to kill you and your family. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, how do we write these things and then like make that like law and mandate it? But then also the people who wrote them weren't even like following it, you know? But again, that was in the 1700s and clearly in the year 2020. It's the same argument. It's not exactly the same, but it's coming from the same place, you know?
Yeah.
Don't write one thing and act another way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's honestly just like, I hate what that whole phrase of make America great again. It's honestly just like, excuse me, make it great again for like who? We just have to come to the realization and the acceptance that America looks different and it continues to evolve and change. Therefore, laws and the way systems are created also need to change for what an American person looks like and is, because we always going to be changing as people, and life goes on all the time. So
I saw this one talk, and it was really, this guy was talking about how we're not different from other nations and the atrocities that we've committed, right? But we are different in the fact that we refuse to acknowledge them. Like it's embedded in our culture to not acknowledge. Like Germany apologized. Like they've issued a formal apology for the atrocities that happened in that nation and have worked constantly to make sure that it doesn't happen again, have like given time and resources and money to the people who were affected. And like in America, that just is not a thing. We just I'm sorry, because I have nothing to do with this, but the majority culture does not acknowledge the atrocities that they've committed. And so they continue to perpetuate, because if you think that nothing's wrong, you're still going to operate out of those patterns. And like, we can say that like our ancestors did that, but like that stuff still gets passed down. It's just, we're in a different mask.
Yeah.
Your children had to be that way, you know?
Mm-hmm. I was going to say when after the Civil War, Black Americans were promised 40 acres and a mule. So like, imagine if we got reparations for every Black American. That's like close to, it was, somebody did the math, it was like close to $300,000 per person, which is like a lot of money. And like 40 acres in the late 1800s is like a lot of land, you know? And like, it never even turned up, you know? Yeah. And so like, that's just, again, that's just one group of people, you know what I'm saying? There's plenty of Native people who are here thinking that like, you know, this is my home and my whole family after generation lived in this spot. And like, it's now like been whittled down to like a reservation, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. The list goes on in terms of like things that America has done and has never, ever, ever taken accountability for. So like, is America great? Like, was America ever great? Because, like, shout out to New Zealand. They have zero cases of coronavirus. And they have, like, live sporting events. I would love to go to a live sporting event. I would love to go to concerts again. But I can't, because America wanted to open up too quickly. So, like, we're number one in terms of, like, deaths. Cool, yeah, we're number one. But, like, we're number one in terms of, like, corona deaths. What are we doing, yo? Come on. This is so stupid.
That's horrible. Yeah.
I have such a hard time because there are so many terrible things that are in our country. But then, like, we are in some ways free, right? Like, we can – the fact that we can gather and have these conversations too, right? Like, in other countries, it's, like, illegal to do this. And I'm not trying to, like, propagate America, but it's just, it's two ways for me. It's like, yes, this America sucks in so many ways, And there's like a couple little ways that like it's actually good. And I don't think it outweighs the bad, but
yeah, we do have privileges as Americans where other citizens of other countries don't, or it happens in a different way, right? Like in terms of my mother's experience in El Salvador, like the main reason why she came here was because of violence and a war and like being really afraid of your safety while you, I mean, this same thing happens here, but I guess the accountability, the systems, XYZ. So I guess there are some privileges, but it's also, it could be seen as masked at times. It's a hard question and like balance to weigh, really. This is actually a very, very hard balance to kind of weigh out and parse out. Like as Americans, we have privileges that other countries don't, but also the realities of what Americans suffer, especially if you're not part of the majority group.
Right. Literally.
Yeah.
Like, shout out to this current administration for always doing the freaking most, like banning all critical race theory workshops within the federal government.
That's horrible.
Because it's communist propaganda.
That's horrible.
You know what I'm saying? Like you don't even want us to criticize America, because honestly, man, like if you criticize something, you clearly care about it. So if the fact that we're even doing this is proof that we have enough idealism to think that America could be great.
Yes. Yeah.
But like, don't be
scared. I didn't even know about that.
Oh yeah.
That's
yeah.
crazy that they did that. That's like,
yeah,
that's Nazi level. That's Nazi level.
It's Nazi level. It is.
That's, but, yeah. We passed the threshold. We need this man out yesterday, right. 4 years ago.
Yeah. Scary. Scary wow. stuff. Well,
I'm,
no, go ahead.
No, I'm just hoping that Biden reinstates that, because that's crazy. Okay, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, you know, I really enjoyed this conversation with you. And I'm wondering if you have anything else that you want to talk about or even plug, because I know you're doing your thing as an actress.
I am. I am actually working on this show called Voices of a Pandemic with Notch Theater Company. We're talking about, I mean, all the stuff that we're talking about right now, it's sort of just chronologically recording 2020. And it takes interviews from like healthcare workers, child protective service workers, protesters, just like the whole gamut of what's been going on in the world. And we're making a play out of it. So check yeah. that out. Notch Theater awesome. Company, follow them on Instagram. Yeah.
What was it again? One time?
Notch Theater Company.
Awesome. And you also have a website, right?
I do. It's portlandthomas.com. Check it out. If you ever need an actress, email me. I'm here.
Yes, she's a phenomenal actress. So please do. She's amazing.
Sweet. And I know we have to plug our stuff because it's holiday season.
And yes, it is.
We got a new drop. We got a new drop on the website. Check us out. We finally have hoodies. I know there was a big demand for hoodies. Shout out to everybody, yeah. like all my people in Cleveland that asked me about, like,
yeah,
you have hoodies and like hats. Now we got them. You know what I'm saying? We got
yeah. So you better buy them now.
I love that. I'm gonna pick mine up right after.
Because
this
I thing. Spent hours making them. No, I'm but for real,
they look sweet. They really do. So. So check us out. Implicitly awkward.bigcartel.com. Yeah. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at implicitly awkward. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at implicitly awk. AWK. There's too many letters. Yeah.
I am dead. Shout out to Marcus for getting me this keychain baby Range Rover for my yes. birthday. Yo, yay to November rip. Birthdays.
Yes, sir. Yo, just when you get the real Range Rover, just let me get a ride. That's all I ask. Just drive yeah. me somewhere, please.
I got to hustle. I'm going to make that dream a reality. Mm-hmm. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We really appreciate all the love and support. And that was implicitly awkward.